And welcome to
Killing It
on Broadway. I'm Jennifer Simard.
And I am Jessica Vosk, and this is the podcast where we discuss all things guts, gore, murder, and mayhem.
It's not safe for work. Hi, Jessica.
Hi, Jennifer.
And hi, Kristen Chenoweth.
Well, hello, Jennifer and Jessica.
Oh,
look at your beautiful pink background. Aw, so cute.
For my girls with my pink.
Oh, my God.
Kristen, I am so happy to see your face. Fred, no, it's Kristen. It's
oh, Lord have mercy.
But Fred Vosk he's always trying to, you know, take center stage. Yeah.
He's a little baby.
Kristen, we are so excited that you're here with us today.
Just love you.
I love y'all too. And I'm so glad to be sitting with two of my probably most talented girls. So, you know, I think that it's cool. I just want to say this, cool that you two girls are doing this, man. I love it.
Oh,
thank you so much. And speaking of talent, you have so much talent and you have this incredible, storied, successful, amazing career, yet we're not here to talk about that today. Nope.
Yeah.
I'm relieved. We talk about other things. Don't we?
Yeah. You're a full person with a whole life, right?
Yeah. You are off the, you are off the necessary talking about the singing hook because we're here to talk about true crime, a fascination station that Jen and I both have. And we are well aware that many of our colleagues are fascinated as well, which also makes me wonder on the daily, because I'm such a fan of true crime, if I am in fact a serial killer myself. Do I know people who are serial killers themselves? Am I a Ted Bundy type? What's my fascination about true crime? And normally, the first question I would ask you, Kristen, is when was the first time that you realized you were interested and fascinated with true crime? But I must say, the thing that's blowing my mind right now is you chose this case. You know, normally Jen and I have a bunch of different cases to choose from, but you specifically chose this one to discuss today, which is the Oklahoma Girl Scout murders. And did that have anything to do with your fascination in the first place with true crime? I mean, did it light a fire for you? What's the history there?
Well, Jessica, I hadn't thought as to why I've always been fascinated as to why human beings behave the way that they do, right?
Yes.
I'm obsessed, especially, I've always been the weirdo. It's been like, did you see Dahmer on Dahmer? Like, I don't know what's wrong with me. I know Mindhunter, Silence of the Lambs, perhaps my favorite movie, and then Sound of Music. So that says a lot about who I am. I was a little girl. It was 1977. And here's what you girls don't know, or maybe you do. I don't think I've ever talked about it publicly. But I was a Girl Scout myself. I was to be on the trip. I was to be.
What?
Yes. I have goosebumps. I'm a chicken. I'm a chicken with goosebumps. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
Yes, this in a true Broadway fashion, I got to say.
She called out. You guys, she called out. She called out.
Wow.
And I was devastated. My mom I remember running a fever and saying, I've been saving up. I've been doing everything. We got to go to Locust Grove, Oklahoma, which is Podunk City. But now forgive me, listeners, but I'm from Oklahoma and we have actual, I am of Native American heritage. I'm almost 30% Choctaw. Now that I've learned about my biological history, but I've been to powwows and they're very real, and I've been to many a teepee, and we were getting to go stay in a campground that was basically teepees, and I just couldn't wait to go. And I had my little friends that I was going to get to be with. One of the teachers in my school, her daughter was going, and I got sick and didn't get to go. And then the Monday after, my mom set me down before I went to school and tried to her best to explain to me about the three mm-hmm. little girls. One of the teacher of our school, one of the girls was her daughter.
Oh, bless.
I'm going to say her name. Her name is Michelle Guzet. Because it's really important that we, as much as I'm going to talk about Jean Leroy Hart, I want to say her name. Because that, I can't imagine losing a child, but I can't imagine losing a child in such a violent way. But that is the surprise to the story, is that my mom sat me down and said, this happened. You are supposed to be on this planet for a reason. She used it as an example of how sometimes when bad things, like when I got sick and couldn't go and I was so devastated, how in fact, I guess you could say lucky I became. Mm-hmm. And three other little girls were unlucky. So that's why I wanted to talk about it. And I, maybe that is what made me so obsessed as that was in 1977. And I was born in 68. And I've been absolutely obsessed with the Ted Bundys, the Dahmers. I mean, you know, propofol, all of it. I want to know everything. I can't understand why people do what they do. Obviously, during this pandemic, I've watched tons of documentaries. For example, Aaron Hernandez, the football player who was a...
Yes. You know, I have to say, you know, you're listening to a podcast right now. You can't see our faces. I have to tell you, my jaw has dropped several times. And of course, Jen, you said goosebumps because we don't often talk to people who are actually personally connected to something that happened in their home state, right around the age that they were, and have this story to tell. And for me, I'm like, I cannot believe that you were supposed to be on this camping trip. That blows my mind.
And it blew my mind when it happened, and I couldn't even understand. And, mm-hmm. and I know I sound like a freak. You know, I get off stage. I'm like, I've got to get home. And, you know, true crime, ID station yes. is my favorite.
Yes, you and we are all so alike in that way. And I, mm-hmm. I think there is a fascination. We've talked about it with friends. We've talked about it together. We are creators. We are on stage. We tell stories. I think we also love to hear about stories, sometimes those that are unsolved or those that get solved, because for us, we can relate and understand the storytelling factor of it. And sometimes when we don't know the end, the smarts in our creative brain try and figure it out for us. So of course it's like, shoot me a documentary. Let me watch Making a Murderer or anything that has to do with true crime.
And reconciling these horrible things with the fact that, you know, we're all just trying to be good people. Kristen, you're a very spiritual person. Sometimes you said you feel like a freak. It's like, I think there's something nice when you can all talk about it, because it did happen, and you want to be so sensitive and careful to the parents. And sometimes humor is used to calm down your own anxiety about it and fear about it. But it's very gray, isn't it? It's not black and white, at least in my opinion.
No, it's not. If you watch actual scripted shows like Mindhunter with our friend Jonathan Groff killing it, mm-hmm. I actually looking at, dare I say the word, and being a Christian person, but science, if you look at the actual science of someone, what goes wrong, you know, I grew up in this town of Broken Arrow where there just nobody, we just were all in each other's business all the time. So I didn't know, I couldn't believe this happened. Now this, a crime occurred in Locust Grove, Oklahoma, and it was, I don't know, hour and a half away.
50 miles east. These little three girls, they were from Broken Arrow. Did you know? You didn't know them, though, personally?
I knew Michelle Cousin a little bit, but you know when you're little, when someone's like a year older, you're like, I don't know them, really.
Of course.
In my mm-hmm. age. But there was about, I don't know, maybe 15 little girls that went, and the fact that Jean Leroy Hart, I never forgot his name.
Wow.
In fact, when you guys called me about this, I knew it had to be Jean Leroy Hart. And I hate to even give him any space, but we must, because I want to understand. He'd already gone to prison for rape and kidnapping. Mm-hmm. This is really disgusting. Two pregnant women.
Yeah.
I've done a little research myself. I don't think he had a good upbringing, but I don't think he loved. I think his mother was really hard on him. Mm. One of the common threads that we see with serial killers, I don't know what it is, especially with sons, I mean men, mm-hmm. it is usually having to do with some sort of hatred or unresolved something with their moms. And Jean Leroy Hart is no different. When he hacksawed his way out of prison with another guy is when he committed these crimes. And get this, before DNA, and I believe I can speak on this being a little bit of Native American heritage, right?
Yeah.
He was a Cherokee Native American, and he, I remember them making such a big deal in Oklahoma that he was Native American, and kind of making me feel like, oh no, me, that's like me. I think we have to look at a person, you know, not their heritage maybe, but how they were raised.
And absolutely.
Well, yeah, because it's always, it is a combination. It's a complicated combination, generally speaking, with these serial killers of psychology, biology, developmental reasons, and environmental reasons. And as you say, you can really look back at the formative years and hopefully find more answers, but it's, there's no one size fits all, which is why one reason it's so scary and so fascinating.
It's so scary. And also, and you know what I'm going to talk about, empathy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Sociopath, not no feelings. When you start seeing someone treat an animal, mm-hmm. which I know that he did, treat an animal without care, then, yeah. then well, what are you going to graduate to? And he just kept graduating. That's all. He kept graduating in the worst possible way.
Listen, we've got so much we want to cover.
I think if we can go ahead and start and tell the story.
What's amazing, Kristen, is you already did so much of, like, you're going to hear some repeat facts. And mm-hmm. I love that you put the primer coat on everyone. So we'll kind of go sequentially. But yeah, some people don't know all the details, right? So shall we, ladies?
Yes, we must. Go ahead, Jen.
I'm just going to really quickly say we got a lot of our facts, folks, because you give credit where credit's due, from Wikipedia, Ranker, DarkIdeas.net, Fundaground.com, Unresolved Mysteries, and Unsolved, the Oklahoma Girl Scout Murders, and Miss Kristen Chenoweth. Okay, Jessica.
So here we go, everyone. We're talking about the Oklahoma Girl Scout Murders. On the evening of June 12th, 1977, approximately 50 miles east of Broken Arrow, Oklahoma, just southeast of Locust Grove, 144 newly arrived Girl Scouts were about to spend 2 weeks and their first night at Camp Scott, which was a traditional activity the Girl Scouts participated in for 50 years.
And as a quick follow-up, I think this is the first time this is now known. It was supposed to be 145 newly arrived Girl Scouts, because Miss Kristen Chenoweth didn't make the trip. Every other podcast I've listened to, and I love all of our predecessors, by the way, they all say 144, and you were, I guess, 145.
Yes,
jeez,
I
Louise. Oh, bless you.
Lucky enough to get sick.
Incredible.
Now, I don't know if you remember the weather that day, Kristen, but we're going to take you and our audience back to what it felt like. That day reached a high of 95 degrees, but by evening, yeah. the temperature dropped to 82. And at approximately 6 p.m., wind gusts kicked up, indicating a bad storm was coming. And at its peak, the gusts reached about 40 miles per hour. By approximately 7 p.m., about half an inch of rain fell upon Camp Scott.
In tent number 8, which is known as Kiowa, three little girls had sheltered from the storm. We have 8-year-old Lori Farmer, we have 9-year-old Michelle Gousset, and 10-year-old Doris Milner, who went by the name Denise. So if you can picture this, the tents were made of canvas over a slightly raised wooden platform floor. So they weren't pop-up tents on the ground. They weren't a DIY situation that your dad would do in the woods, but they were rugged nonetheless. And interesting to note, there was supposed to be a fourth little girl in tent number 8, but due to a clerical error, she ended up neighboring in tent number 7. And had it not been for the storm, she would have been moved into tent number 8 that night. Kristen, did you know this? I see you nodding.
I did know that. I'm nodding like crazy because can you imagine being her parents?
Ooh,
I know.
Thank you, God, that you weren't transferred in tent number 8.
Amen.
Like, thank you, yeah. God, you wasn't. Oh,
amen.
And you, of course, don't know what tent you were supposed to be in.
No, I never. No. I mean, I probably knew it one time. I mean, I saved up to go on this trip. And I just couldn't believe my luck. But when you guys are describing Oklahoma, actually beautiful because our weather, we're very famous for obviously very fast changes. We have Oklahoma wind. We are obviously known for what? Tornado. And it's
right.
not lost on me that all the years later, I would be in a show that is about, you know, based on a movie about a tornado. And we have them tornadoes wipe our cities out. And I remember thinking, oh my gosh, everybody's getting wet. Okay, that's my little, whatever, what was I, an 8 or 9 year old mind going, everybody's getting wet.
Aww.
Gosh. Well, this is why we
back,
love you.
Yeah. Love, can't love enough. Getting back to that fateful night. So there were no lights. All right. This blows my mind. Just flashlights in this storm. Can you guys imagine just being 8, 9, and 10, no lamps, your first night away from home. Anyway, they have their flashlights to see by, and each girl rides out the storm by writing a letter to their families. And sweet little Michelle, whom you know, oh God, Kristen, I'm so sorry. She says, "Dear Aunt Karen, how are you? I am writing from camp. We can't go outside because it is storming. Me and my tent mates are Denise Milner and Lori Farmer." This really gets me. She says, "My room is shades of purple." Love, Michelle.
Oh,
you guys are, you know, that I thought I knew so much about the case, because of course, what I really know about, which they drove home, was Jean Leroy Hart, right? But that kind of information is why this show is so important and wonderful, because we just heard from Michelle. We just heard a letter saying,
that's right.
You know, geez.
And you know, it's sort of, you think about it, Lori did the same thing. She writes to her family saying, we're just getting ready to go to bed. It's 7:45. I can't wait to write you. We're all writing letters now because there's nothing else to do.
And finally, Denise, with heartbreaking foreshadowing, writes, "I don't like camp. It is awful. Mom, I don't want to stay at camp for 2 weeks. I want to come home and see Cassie and everybody." Yeah. Kristen's shaking her head.
Kristen's shaking her head, because if we've ever been to camp, I have been to camp, sleepaway camp. And I don't know if you ladies are with me on this, but I remember going to like a you know, entertainment sleepaway camp where it was like, you know, singing from 9 to 5 and you know, maybe you have a little piece of turkey jerky. And that is what I did. And it was so awful. All I wanted to do was come home.
Oh, yeah. I went camping with my parents and my brothers, which was fun. I liked small groups, but I never wanted to go to camp, and I refused. And I remember there were girls in my neighborhood who went to camp and come to camp. It was called Camp Bernadette, not after Bernadette Peters, but Camp Bernadette. And I had no interest. No.
Opposite of you girls. Not only could I not wait, I was planning my outfits. I remember asking my mom, because I rolled hot rollered my hair, and not understanding there wasn't going to be plugins. And she was like, "You're just going to have to ponytail it the whole time." I've always been that girl. And I tell you what, this was one of the most tragic and senseless things that could have ever happened. And it pains me to hear those letters that what was her name, Jennifer? The one that said, I want to be Cassie.
Denise. I think Denise was her middle name, but that was the name she went by. And heartbreaking.
Since we're talking about these letters being written, they were written in the evening. And then a few hours later at 10 p.m., this camp counselor, Dee Elder, she checks the Kiowa tent. She sees nothing out of the ordinary. And then 2 hours later after that, which is about midnight, camp counselor Carla Wilhite heads over to the latrines, fantastic word, where there are some girls that are goofing around, and she escorts them. I would be those girls. I'd be the goofing around girl. And they head back to their tents.
I'd be Carla. Yeah.
Exactly. Okay. Yes, you would. And an hour and a half later, 1:30 a.m.-ish, these same girls from 10-6, by the way, they're still making noise. So Carla shines her flashlight towards them. She's like, you know, "Ladies, hello, time for BED and the TENT." And she hears something weird. She hears a strange noise coming from behind the tent. She's like, it's low. It's a guttural sound. She shines her light towards the direction. When she does, the sound stops. So she thinks maybe it's an animal, goes back to her tent and goes to sleep.
Now, in our timeline, it's about 4.5 hours later at 6 a.m. Carla, her alarm goes off. She gets up to shower. And as she's heading there, she sees what she thinks might be luggage. But as she gets closer, she sees it is, in fact, sleeping bags and the body of a girl lying face up and naked from the waist down. It's Denise Milner. Carla runs to get help from the other counselors, as well as check on tent number 8, where she finds that all 3 girls are missing. She then runs to the nurse and the camp director, Barbara Day's house, to inform them. The nurse, after checking Denise's pulse, confirms she is dead, and it is actually the camp director's husband, Richard Day, who discovers the remains of Michelle Gousset and Lori Farmer in their sleeping bags. Richard also takes another sleeping bag to demurely cover and expose Denise. The girls had been sexually assaulted, bludgeoned, and strangled.
Unbelievable. I mean,
horrifying.
Imagine, though, I remember in the news, too, you guys, when they would say, they thought maybe it was a bear or maybe it was a coyote even. But what's so sick about what he did is he clearly got one of them by herself, right? Mm-hmm. And then what happened? This is what I don't know. And this is what bothered me. What happened when the two were found together? Did one have to watch the other one get hurt? Mm.
Well, we're going to get into that. And I found there's some conflicting reports about that. And maybe I'll tag on Jessica when you get to that part, because I did read a theory about that. But
But even crazier, and I wonder if Kristen knows this, a flashback to 2 months prior that April, there was this training session for camp counselors like you do. And the weekend ended early when one of the counselors' cabins happened to be ransacked. And strangely enough, the only thing that went missing was a box of donuts, which makes me wonder where the two of you were at that time, but whatever, we don't have to discuss it. So the donuts were missing. However, the box was left behind. But the reason this is crazy and it literally jaw-dropping is because there was a handwritten note in the box saying, quote, "We are on a mission to kill 3 girls in 2 months." The letter also mentioned Martians. And so the camp administrators, they just said, it's got to be a prank, which really, to me, is like, can you imagine that happening now without the madness ensuing afterwards?
Yeah. I imagine the guilt they felt. I mean, can you imagine living with that after? That's horrifying.
I didn't know about the Martian thing, but I did know about the donuts. Again, food is all now.
This episode is brought to you by our best friends at Spindrift. Yes, you heard me. Best friends. For those who know us, you know how addicted we are to true crime and sparkling water. Cue the day when we were both starring in Broadway shows and stumbled upon the Holy Grail, Spindrift.
America's first sparkling water with real squeezed fruit. Yep, that's it. 11 flavors with no worries about any chemicals going into your body. You'll have a crush on all flavors, trust us.
Oh, and they make the perfect mixer for your holiday bevvies too.
Oh, the possibilities are endless. Just go now to drinkspindrift.com, find your match, and use our sassy sparkling code KILLIT20 at checkout and get 20% off your first order. Self-care, baby. After all, it's necessary in 2020.
I was like, okay, one of the things that serial killers do is they love to test something out. They get better and better and better. So he probably went, and I don't know why he used the word we. And maybe he did with his cohorts from jail. I don't know. Maybe y'all know that. But I don't know why. I mean, maybe they went there to check it out and maybe take a life then. But they clearly were paying attention to this site.
The police absolutely know that it was planned. That they know. This was not a spur of the moment attack. So we're here now. We're in the wee hours of June 13th, 1977. The girls were found approximately 150 yards from their tent site. And in lay terms, 150 yards is the equivalent in length to about 5 ice hockey rinks.
Fred, no. Sorry.
Fred is very upset with me. Sorry, Fred. Now, after Counselor Carla went to sleep, there are reports. Oh, Fred. Fred, we're working. While I have you, Kristen, one of my questions today was, do you think Jean Leroy Hart did it? I didn't know where you were on that.
I believe it was him, and I could be wrong. I know in my gut, that's just me speaking as with my Native American spirit, gut feeling, right?
So clearly, we'll get there, but clearly you do believe that he did it, and we'll get there, but okay. Okay, now, after Counselor Carla went to sleep, there are reports of strange things occurring during the night, specifically around the witching hour, 3 a.m., which all of us know something about. Now, the night of the murders, there are reports of girls at other camps being woken by screams. Also at that time, someone was allegedly, you know, skulking through the camp and reaching into the tents and stealing things. And probably most scary of all was that a girl from Tent 7 reported seeing a man pull back the tent flap, shine a light at she and her tent mates, then replace the flap and move away, presumably on to tent number 8.
That was big in the news. And what he did is he woke her up, and he's not going to do that, right? He's going to go to the tent where there's 3 sleeping girls.
Yes.
And they had gotten up in the middle of the night, these 3 little girls, and to go to the bathroom, because on camping grounds, you know what that is. You get up, you put your shoes on and your jacket, and you go to the bathroom. And that's where he did it. So Yeah, he got them when they were getting up to go to the bathroom. And, you know, he probably, there's rumors. I cannot confirm or deny this because I can't fully remember. But I do believe that they found candy wrappers. So a lot of these serial killers need a trap, especially a young person. And mm-hmm. I tell you what, I would have been the first one in line for a Snickers. So I don't know. I mean, he might have.
Kristen, same.
Listen, my mom passed 6 years ago, but her wake was on Halloween and Snickers were her favorite. So you bet we just handed those out to everyone as they came in because she would have loved that.
I would have loved her. and I would like at my funeral, and I'm going on record now, in a gift bag, I want these three items: hand sanitizer, lashes, and Snickers.
Okay. You heard it here. Okay. Let's get back to this horrible story. And it's horrible.
This is so clearly difficult to talk about because it's children. This is so clearly difficult to talk about because at the time, Kristen, like you said, the perpetrator or perpetrators entered tent number 8 through this back flap and they raped and murdered both Lori and Michelle in that site. Now,
in the case of Denise, police think she was moved outside of the tent where she was assaulted, then murdered.
Jen, I see your hand is raised.
Well, to Kristen's point earlier, I said I had a chit in this moment, and I did read the theory, and please forgive these details because it's really awful, but that Lori and Michelle were bludgeoned as he came in. And I couldn't find this anywhere, but logically I was thinking, you know, Denise was 10. She was a little older and bigger. I am completely hypothesizing, Kristen, but maybe because she was a little older, that is why he took her out. Like, maybe she was harder to constrain.
We all know that when a person is hit or bludgeoned, that makes them weak. So he probably went there first mm-hmm. to make sure and then he went back to the other one. This is what I'm imagining. Now I'm imagining this, right? I don't know.
Yes.
None of us were there, but then he did what he wanted to do to the other mm-hmm. girl. He went back to our 10-year-old. Mm-hmm. And finished it off.
Yeah.
And that is, I guess, what's the most sick part of a serial killer's mind. You know, this is not a man, Jean Roy Hart, who, you know, look at us three strong women here right now on this podcast. He went for a week. When he was charged with first degree rape and kidnapping of women in 66, he had raped pregnant women. So mm-hmm. they're not going to be as strong or at their best. They're going to be trying to protect their mm-hmm. child, right? Then he goes for children. This is a weak, sad, weak man. His mother told him his whole life, this is me imagining with forensic science and me wishing I, you know, really had become that.
I'm taking online classes for forensic psychology. So join me. You can do it from anywhere in the world. I'm just saying.
So you're going to need to text me all the information.
I will.
I want to do it.
My friend, I'm there. Now, Jess, can you lead us back to a little bit more of the forensic evidence?
I will. I wanted to just say what a great point about hypothesizing as to why this person did this. And in part, after all of this happened, the killer / killers tried to wipe up the blood in the tent with bed sheets. They left behind black duct tape and a flashlight, and there was a single fingerprint left on the flashlight and a shoe print in a size 9.5.
Kristen, what size shoe did you wear in 77?
I mean, I wear a 5 now, so I probably the size of my hand. I mean,
it was okay, like, she's cleared. She's cleared, Jessica.
She's cleared. Not a Kristen shoe.
No.
You know, but what I will say is that the police do believe the crime was planned in advance. Obviously, the three of us have hypothesized this as the mm-hmm. smart forensic scientists we are. But in Denise's case, she had been gagged and that gag was pre-sewn. It was pre-sewn. And there was also a nylon rope. All of us are having like a mind bloop right here because there was a nylon rope that had been used to bind all three of the victims. Regarding Denise, there was a bit of a mystery surrounding her socks and her shoes, and the police kept a guarded perimeter around the campsite the weeks following the murders. And in the time that they had that, you know, perimeter around the campsite, they were convinced that there was a prowler stalking the area because one day the police went out searching for the prowler. And when they returned to the space they were using as their office, the Great Hall, they discovered a bag had been left for them by the door. And inside of the bag, oh my God, again, actual, you know, goosebumps all over my body, were a pair of wet pink socks and a pair of wet shoes with a note saying Denise Milner.
I just have to interject this. Mm-hmm. Again, serial killers, especially when you look at BTK. When you look at the BTK killer, oh, he loved to have, they either love to, first of all, a lot of them want to be chased and they want to think that they're smarter. Look at the Unabomber. They want to think that they're smarter than the police. And by the way, if you don't believe me, here's a little, what do you call it? Something you save,
a trophy.
So not only do I had the trophy and enjoyed it for a while, but now I'm going to leave it at your doorstep.
Huh? Mm-hmm. Oh, huh. Animalistic. Yep. Animalistic. It's like an animal going out and killing something and saying, look what I got for you. That's exactly the thing. And it's weird because the police, after this trophy was left for the police, it's weird because the police also claim that her socks and her shoes were already in custody. But Denise's mother insisted they were definitely her daughter's.
Right. Moms know. Moms know.
No, always. I'm sorry. My mom and I have ESP. I don't understand it. There's something with women. We both know what we all three here know what we're talking about.
I completely agree.
In the show notes, I'm going to label us all Dr. Vosk, Dr. Samard, and Dr. Chenoweth. I think we've earned it.
I do have an honorary doctorate. So you should refer to me as Dr. Chenoweth. Ladies.
There you go. It's in the script. God. It's in the show notes on iTunes. Here you come, Dr. Chenoweth.
Had I known, I would have been doing for years.
Now, I know we're all, it's Jean Leroy Hart. However, let's get to some suspects. Now, we'll get to those suspects in a minute, but the autopsy would leave you to believe that there might have been more than one killer. The coroner found that the weapons, which were never recovered, must have been held in both left and right hands, that more than one weapon was used, and that two different knots had been used to tie up the girls. 4 days later, a cave nearby showed writing apparently written on June 17th, 1977, saying, quote, the killer was here. Bye-bye, fools, unquote. It says killer, singular, not plural. And what I find most interesting is that the date is written in a format that is not grammatically, you know, typical. And we'll post a photo of it on Instagram so you can see it. But I did some research on this. And typically in America, we would write in the format month, day, year. In Britain and some other European countries, the format would be day, month, year. Most countries in Asia write in the format as seen on our cave wall, year, month, day. Some countries, like Canada, use a combination of all three, depending on who's the recipient of the communication. This format was also linked to military usage and prisons, such as the National Corrections Reporting Program. Finally, the year, month, day order, like our cave drawing, is popular in computer applications as it reduces the amount of code needed to resolve and compute dates. It's commonly used in software where there are many separately dated items, such as documents or media, because sorting alphabetically will automatically result in the content being listed chronologically. Now, if we, all the doctors here, were to profile the author of the cave writing, I would say that this person had experience with travel to Asia, perhaps in the military, or they were previously incarcerated, or had experience with data entry. Now, one of the suspects of the case was an inmate by the name of Bill Stevens, whom the prosecution accused of committing the crime. And of note, Bill had served in the military in Vietnam.
Dr. Samard?
Mm-hmm.
Very well done, Doc Samard.
Thank you very much.
Impressive.
Dr. Chenoweth, yes. I must say, on to other suspects. It was discovered that the tape and the rope used in the crime had been stolen from a farm about a mile down the road. And the farmer, whose name is Jack Schroff, he had an alibi for that night of the killings. He passed a voluntary lie detector test. I don't know how I feel about those, but nonetheless, an article still had his picture with the headline Slayer, which I think is not good.
No, don't do that to people.
I remember it. I remember his picture.
Wow.
Remember, that's all that we had on the news. There were three TV stations back then, Dr. Mm-hmm. Samar, Dr. Voss, and we watched them all. And we had pictures. I actually remember I couldn't remember their names. I'm glad you brought them up, but I can remember one of them. I thought, well, he's so guilty.
Wow. The Oklahoma State Bureau of Investigation, the OSBI, for those of us who want to abbreviate, went on to eliminate Jack Schroff as a suspect, as well as the aforementioned Richard Day and camp ranger Ben Woodward. And the OSBI turned their sights on Jean Leroy Hart. Now, keep in mind, Camp Smith is in Mays County, and Jean Leroy Hart, at the time of the murders, had been on the run after escaping from the Mays County jail, which Kristen knows about this. He was a convicted burglar, rapist, and attempted murderer, and he had been sentenced to, count it, 305 years for his crimes.
Right. And then let's talk further about the similarities of the cases and why the OSBI considered him, you know, good for it. And Kristen alluded to this earlier, and it was so intuitive of her. In the rape cases mentioned, Jean in 1966 did indeed rape two pregnant women. Just horrifying. Like the killer in our crime, he used duct tape and rope, and in the 1966 case, attempted to murder them by covering their mouths with the duct tape and leaving them in the woods to die. Thank the Lord they lived. Also, and this is what Kristen was saying, you have to consider the fact that while you do have a difference in these cases of women versus children, all five of these individuals are physically vulnerable compared to this perpetrator.
Absolutely correct. I mean, it truly is mind-blowing. And really scary to think about. And to be honest, to go even further, after 2 weeks, about 2 weeks after the crime, a farmer reported seeing Jean on a hillside. And a side note here, Jean had been raised 1 mile away from Camp Scott. And after a 10-month search in April of 1978, Jean was found hiding out with a friend. I mean, hello, who hides out? Only 50 miles east of Camp Scott. Now, see, here's the thing. If you were going to go on the run, if you're going to say, let me take a little satchel backpack here. Let me take a run from a 350-year conviction. Let me break free and get myself out. Why wouldn't you stay that close to the scene of the crime? Wouldn't you want to go a little further away? I don't know, jump state lines maybe. You want to just not, you know, be found 50 miles away, which seems, you know, a little tiddlywink close to where the crime was.
The donuts. Clearly, it's the donuts.
Whoever made the donuts obviously has a great business.
So, Jean is put on trial in March 1979. And guys, I'm just going to rip off the Band-Aid. Drum roll, Kristen.
Without the DNA and the division of the jury, he was actually acquitted of all three murders.
Ugh, he was acquitted.
Gross.
It was ultimately a battle over the evidence. Like the fact that the shoe print found at the crime scene was a 9.5 and Jean was a size 11, whatever, whatever, as Kristen. Oh, I stole your tag. Oh, I said whatever, whatever. That's not my tag. I'm cutting it out.
Do whatever you want. How dare you?
Jessica Vosk, I stole your thing. I'm giving it back. I'm giving it back like the nose. Here's your nose back.
It'll be $7 million. Okay, go ahead.
Also, there were accusations that he was being framed, you know, anyway. That said, the local sheriff pronounced he was 1,000% certain Jean was guilty. Despite his acquittal in the case, he was remanded back to prison to serve out the remainder of his 350-year sentence. I can't get over that. Like, you're really not getting out.
You're not getting out unless you are some ghost who time travels. And also, I want to say, like, the local sheriff pronounced he was 1,000% certain. That's a lot of thousands of percents. And this is also at a time we can't really say we have our hands on the best DNA research. We just don't. This is not around the time when that was really heavily being used. And to be honest with you, within just 3 months on June 4th, 1979, at age 35, which is 2 years younger than myself. That's right, I'm 37. Jean died suddenly from a heart attack after an hour of lifting weights and jogging in the prison exercise yard.
Kristen, A, I would say don't be healthy. B, how do you feel about that?
I was thrilled when that came on the news. I thought, well, now this is the human side to me. Okay. This is the unbecoming moment from me. I wanted that. And I'm not afraid to admit it. I think that, you know, forgiveness and all these things are really important. Of course, wasn't my sin to forgive, but man, when he died, I was like, good. Now, I'm sorry. That's maybe not a nice thing to say, but I was happy.
Absolutely. I'm just, again, it's like, thank goodness you have come armed with all of this information.
One of the, a local person, and I hate to say a local Cherokee medicine man, but that's the way he self-described, prophesied Hart's fate, saying that the Great Spirit would rise up and strike Hart down for what he had done, if guilty, that is. And Hart actually did die. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. On the anniversary date of the initial June 1966 crime. So there's something about very powerful. I say this in a proud way of being having some Native American heritage. There's something very powerful about that is within us. I think now I'm going to go to a direction that you guys are going to go, wait, why is she doing that? But when you're talking about building something on an ancient burial ground,
I'm saying, please go there, sis. Please go there.
Please.
I think, you know, when we saw Poltergeist that Steven Spielberg did so long ago and
yes,
found out that the house, I believe in that stuff. I believe that spirit is spirit. And I believe that some spirits, and this is, I'm a Christian, but this doesn't always go exactly with what I've been taught and what some of my Christian, most of my Christian friends believe, but I do believe in good and evil. And I believe that there are people on this planet that are evil. And I believe that most of them don't even know they're evil.
Girl, I'm with you. But you know what, Kristen? It's the fact that this seems to all pile on that you were supposed to be there. That's my thing is that all of these, anything that happens in our brain and the way that we process things and even our empathetic nature, that feeling to me, that feeling of, oh my God, I'm so glad that he died is I would feel the same way.
Oh, I did, y'all. And also it should be noted, not that it matters, but very soon after that, I just couldn't be a Girl Scout anymore. I just couldn't do it. Not that I was afraid. I just felt like, oh, I don't know. Isn't it weird? Like, do I want to put on that uniform again?
Mm-hmm. Wow.
I want to give a pause to Michelle and her family. I don't want to go to school and have Miss Guze see me in my green Girl Scout outfit. I don't want to remind her. And that was me at that young age, just telling my mom, Mama, I don't want to. And that I've asked myself over the years, why? And that is why, because I didn't want to disrespect, if that makes any kind of sense.
It makes 100% sense. And it reminds me of the Golden State Killer, one of his victims playing the piano, and he attacked her when she was playing the piano. And she had to stop playing the piano. You know, she was always afraid someone was behind her. And it's just, how can it not affect you and change you?
Yes.
All right. Fast forward to 1989. We were talking about DNA testing. DNA testing was done, as we discussed, and proved that 3 out of the 5 probes matched Jean's DNA, making the chance Jean was the killer 1 in 7,770. I wish we'd gotten the other 2 probes because maybe that number would have gotten smaller. But in 2008, they tried again. The samples were ordered, but the sampling at that point was too deteriorated. But don't lose hope, because in 2017, $30,000 was raised by the sheriff in order to use the latest advances in DNA testing. I did do a search. I haven't found any new information, but maybe there will be soon.
I hope so. And you know, to that point, Richard Guze, the father of Michelle, went on to help the state legislature pass the Oklahoma Victims Bill of Rights. This is huge. He also helped found the Oklahoma Crime Victims Compensation Board. And another parent, Sherry Farmer, founded the Oklahoma Chapter of Parents of Murdered Children. This is something that you don't necessarily see every day, but I'm so glad that they were able to lend themselves in such a way.
A support group, absolutely. And you know, officially, because of the acquittal, this is officially an unsolved case. So if you have any information, you can email or phone in anonymously to Oklahoma Crime Stoppers. Crime Stoppers encourages members of the community to assist local law enforcement agencies in the fight against crime by overcoming the 2 key elements that inhibit community involvement: fear and apathy. Their website is www.oklahoma.crimestoppersweb.com, or you can call the hotline at 1-800-635-8477.
And don't worry, y'all, we'll put that information up on our Instagram too. You'll be able to find it there. And in every sense of the word, Kristen, we are so lucky to have you as our first guest on our podcast premiere. We cannot thank you enough for being so open and vulnerable and transparent. As always, you are a hero to so many people, especially the ladies out there. Mm-hmm. And I think this is the perfect time to just say, like, Kristen, for our purposes, now that you lived this story, you spoke about this story, is there anything else that you would love to add that you feel that you didn't have the chance to add yet for either our listeners to know or just for you to say, get off your chest, anything, really? We would love to hear it.
Yeah, I would like to say to Jennifer and Jessica and to your listeners, especially to young ladies listening, We cannot let violence against women and young ladies scare us into not living.
Oh.
So we do, we continue on. We become, forgive me, smarter. We become more aware. And some of us carry mace, some of us carry taser, whatever we do. I'm not going to even get into how people protect themselves, but I will say, young ladies, do not be afraid to go on a trip. Do not be afraid. Just be wise. Notice your surroundings and live your life to the fullest and enjoy. And don't let something like this stop you from enjoying your life. That's what I really want to say to the young ladies out there.
Amen.
Oh, you are a doctor all around in every sense of the word. And we cannot thank you enough, Kristen.
Thank you, Kristen. Love you so much.
I love you gals so much. Right back. Continue this. I cannot wait to hear your next podcast. I will be an avid listener and an avid learner, a student of life. And this topic, I appreciate that you handled it with such care and love when talking about the three girls. So thank you. And I love y'all.
Bye. Love you.
Bye. She's just the best.
I think that she really obviously is so passionate about this case. Mm-hmm. I love us.
I love us too. Are you proud?
I'm so proud. And I'm so proud of us.
We're so lucky.
I know. But you know what?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In the same token, we really work fucking hard. So let's
now that it's over, I was very nervous today.
Oh,
I was
well, you know what?
Because I didn't get enough sleep. I was so tired.
I know that feeling. Believe me, I had an anxious stomach too. I don't know why. It's just also it's a full moon today and yesterday, mm-hmm. and it's I get very affected by that. So
yeah.
I am with you, my friend, my amiga. So yeah. So I think that this could not have gone better.
We are so lucky that we're gonna reveal to people for the first time that Kristen Chenoweth was supposed to be on that trip.
Is that not so fucking insane?
We got an exclusive. Are we reporters now?
I think we're obviously reporters. Yes. I don't mean to say that we're doctors and reporters, but don't mess with us. You know what I mean? Don't fucking mess with us. Until next time, keep killing it.
Don't kill anyone.
Crime fam, go to our Patreon page and join us to get exclusive bonus content and
follow us on Instagram at Killing It On Broadway and Twitter at Killing It On B-Way.
Subscribe to us wherever you download your podcasts.
And go ahead and give us a 5-star rating and lovely review. It'll be good for you.
Killing It On Broadway is a production of Killing It On Broadway, LLC.
Music by Mary Mitchell Campbell. Orchestrations, Benedict Braxton Smith.
Edited and engineered by Smokey.
Morale officers, Fred and Nelson. Say goodbye, Fred.
Say goodbye, Nelson.